Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the ultimate Sleep Number event on the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed. You can both adjust your comfort with your Sleep Number setting.
Can it help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
But can it help keep me asleep?
Absolutely. It intelligently senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you both effortlessly comfortable.
Will it help me come out swinging?
You got this.
So you can really promise better sleep?
Not promise, prove. Don't miss our weekend special. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus 0% interest for 60 months on all smart beds. Ends Monday.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Donesia, the commissioner of WBNN. For those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the Text Now app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J.
Some people live their dream. Some people close their eyes. Some people's destiny passes by. There are no guarantees. There are no
is a product of WBNN. This is Eating on a Spiritual Level with Chef Yosef. On air now from Lagos, dial in at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation, brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. Good evening. This is Chef Yosef, and you're listening to Eating on a Spiritual Level. What a great nostalgic song, Brother O, DJ legend Brother O started us off with, by Toto. I don't think I've heard that in a long time. But we get right into our conversation tonight. We have a returning guest, my good friend Michelle Granberg. And she is so many things. She's a vegan activist. She's she works in an animal sanctuary. She's also a therapist. She does past life readings. She does therapy on what do you call it? Michelle, you're going to get me for not having this right, but she does healing services. But if you want to check out her services and how you can get help from her services, go to her website, Michelle Granberg. That's Michelle with one L, Granberg, GRANBERG.com. She's an amazing woman. She does amazing work. She does amazing things. And she has such a passion for animals and veganism and the vegan lifestyle that I thought it not robbery to have her back on the show and take our conversation a little bit further. Last time we talked about being vegan for the sake of the animals. This time we're going to talk about taking a step further and talk about, what does veganism, vegan activism look like? Because I think some people think that we just get on a soapbox and go around, you know, patrolling people's plates and say you should be vegan, you should be that. But I think it's a little deeper than that, and Michelle can tell you better than I can, but I'm going to say welcome to her. Michelle, good evening. Welcome to Eating on a Spiritual Level with Chef Yosef. How are you?
Hey, Chef Yosef. I'm great. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to be on your show and to talk about the animals.
Mm-hmm. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad to have you on the show because I think it's an untapped subject. We talk so much about the food, but we don't really talk enough about the intent behind why we eat. And this, of course, a great portion of it is for health, but it's also an even greater portion that we be mindful and respect the animal population. So let's get into that. What exactly is vegan activism? Like, you know, people hear that term, and I think they shy away. I think, you know, somebody's just going to come try to take the stick out of their mouth. You know, what is vegan activism, and what does it look like? What is the real cause behind it? What are we going after? What are we preaching? What's the message? You know, go into all those things. The floor is open just for you.
Great. Yeah, I love talking about this, you know, and because I'm really hoping we'll reach people who will hear this message, and maybe they'll actually feel called to action after this conversation and be motivated to take more action for animals, because that's really what activism is. It's not just talking about what needs to change, but it's doing things to create those changes. And trust me when I say change is really direly needed for the animals. We really can't go on like this. We can't go on year after year the way that we are hurting and harming animals. It's about really us evolving and changing our entire way that we look at animals. So, you know, as you said, I'm a vegan and I'm an animal rights activist for about 7 years. I'm literally not the same person as I was before I went vegan and started fighting for the animals. So, yeah, I mean, it's like night and day for me. I mean, it's as if I just finally arrived in my life fully aware, fully present when I started fighting for the animals. And, you know, I want people to know that there are many forms of animal rights activism, and we can touch on a few. But even so, I never would have necessarily imagined myself as the kind of person who would, you know, engage in animal rights activism. I don't consider myself a rebel. You know, I'm relatively shy in some ways and reserved. But this caused me and brought out in me the latent boldness because of the cause itself. I said, okay, I need to put my own sort of limitations aside and put the animals first, which is what we're doing when we're talking about them tonight.
Of course.
So, yeah, so, I mean, it's important, I think, to repeat a little bit, you know, what we said last time, that veganism is not a diet. It really is a stance against animal cruelty.
It's
abstaining from animal cruelty through every action that is possible and practical. It's living in a way that does not cause suffering and takes no lives. You know, so for me, I love animals unequivocally. So in order to live in alignment with my values of loving animals, I live vegan because that means I create no harm. I create no additional harm. Animals are already being harmed. And I personally abstain from animal products and I help animals. That's what activism is.
Yes.
Putting those values into motion. And, you know, animal cruelty comes in so many forms, but it's basically defined as, you know, gratuitously inflicting harm and injury or killing an animal. And that's what's happening when we eat animals or wear their skins or buy animal products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when we talk about animal rights, it's not about animals having the right to vote. It's not about having the exact same types of rights that humans have, but it's based on the belief that all sentient animals, human and non-human, have moral worth independent of their utility to humans, right? Just because we like to use them doesn't mean that they don't have their own basic interests and free will. And they should be afforded at least, at the bare minimum, the same basic rights to be free from harm and left to their own will and choices in terms of how they want to live.
Mm-hmm.
So animal rights activism, you know, is the actions that animal rights activists take within the animal rights movement. So it's part of these actions that I and my other fellow activists take. We see that we feel we're connected to every other single animal rights activist across the globe, whether we know them or not. We're all part of this chain link of this social justice movement toward animal liberation, the idea that one day we want the violence against animals completely to stop. Like, that would be the end goal of this. You know, and the modern animal rights movement began in the 1970s, probably with Peter Singer. He published a book called Animal Liberation, which I recommend to everyone. And that grabbed so much attention that it inspired a lot of people to gather, to start to organize, not just sort of randomly. Yeah, and so the animal rights movement is strategic. It might look from the outsider observer perspective that it's just people showing up sort of randomly and they're doing all these things and it's kind of loud and it's kind of in your face. In some ways it is, in some ways it isn't, but it's planned. It's planned and strategic and well thought out by smart people, people smarter than me, who I get to, you know, be with and discuss. What are we going to do going forward to, you know, try to get justice for the animals?
I would think it has to really be planned out like that, very strategic, because one, you're taking a message that's very sensitive into the public eye, and not only that, you're taking a message that's highly rejected in many areas. You know, a lot of people automatically are so ready to turn a deaf ear to what's being said in regard to animal activism because they want to hold on to their habits. You know, they don't want to hear someone tell them that, you know, not eating animals is going to one day save the planet. It's going to help us preserve the environment. It's going to help us, you know, get our planet back to its cycle of nature that it needs to embrace. They don't want to hear that because, one, it takes them out of their comfort zone. And number two, what they're used to consuming, they don't want to know that that has to be minimized or taken away from them. Like people feel like feel as though a privilege is being taken away from them. But what about what the animal feels like when their privilege is being taken away from them? Because they come here innocently. You know, there's no animal comes here thinking, okay, well, how long is it going to be before I get slaughtered? You know?
Right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's their lives at stake. You know, they're the ones suffering. And it's so interesting how what you're saying is so true. When you bring this up for people, if they're not in a place where they're ready to hear the message and they're not really open, they'll maybe immediately become defensive. Their defense mechanisms just kick into high gear. When it becomes something personal for them, like something's going to be taken away, their favorite food is going to be, you know, is going to be taken away, or their leather boots are going to be taken away, or their wanting to go to the zoo and visit animals behind bars is going to be taken away.
Or the turkey.
You know, they don't get as angry when it's something that is more far removed from them. But when you mention that, they immediately make it about them. It's just a defense mechanism, and they turn themselves into the victim.
How could you do this to me?
Right.
It's
that cognitive dissonance that people are so entrenched in their belief systems, and everything revolves around that so much that it calls into question everything they believe, you know, on a subconscious level, and what they the foundation of their decisions, their foundation of their identity, often the foundation of their religion, the foundation of their culture, their traditions, their family relationships, have all often revolved around the eating of animals, the wearing of animals, rituals that involve animals, entertainment that involves animals. And then, you know, they're just not ready to topple that house of cards, so they may project that angrily. And I think somewhere in there, we're all compassion, so likely it's guilt, you know, it's right, their conscience is flashing red, you know, I feel bad about this. And if they're not ready to sort of just explore that, then that's how it comes out, like I'm a victim, or I'm angry.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing that, just to think of when you really become conscious of this, you realize how much you've been very ignorant to this whole gamut of how, especially this country, but the world uses animals to their advantage, and it's at the animal's expense. And so it's like you feel as though, now get this concept, you feel as though items of luxury are attributed to how exotic the animal is that, you know, you destroyed to have that item just for you to say, oh, I have this particular fur coat that is from, it's from a rare animal in the jungle that's not seen. Or I have these shoes that come from a sea animal that, you know, it's so deep in the sea that, you know, they're not even known to man by the shore. It's like bragging rights to go and say, well, we sought high and low for these types of animals to make this particular clothing item, and it's rare, and it's so expensive that, you know, you have to be a privileged person to wear this.
Right.
Now, how sick is that? But that,
yeah, it's a little
simplification of the finer things in life. Like, do you realize what you're saying? So you go after an endangered species to slaughter them and to take their skin or whatever it is that you want to take and market it as being something that only the super rich or the wealthy or the privileged class can enjoy. And but that separates us from other people who can't afford to buy an $8,000 that keeps me warm in the wintertime. But you're not going to talk about the process of how that fox fur coat was made. Nobody talks about that.
No, well, absolutely. Except for animal rights activists. What's that?
That's the finer things in life.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, we can do better. We can absolutely do better in terms of our priorities. And we don't mean this in a judgmental way at all. It's just, you know, putting a fine point on this, that our priorities are a little mixed up and backwards without us thinking about it. If we put appearance and our reputation and our status as more important than the entire life, the suffering, and the entire life of an animal, whether it's to wear their skin or whether it's to eat a meal that only takes 10 minutes to eat, and that animal only has, you know, one life. So,
right.
Weighing that out, I think maybe you and I feel it's a no-brainer, of course. Let the animals live. I can wear synthetic clothing. I can wear man-made clothing. You know, I can wear clothing that even looks like leather or looks like fur if I want to, because all of that is available to us here in 2022. And I can eat things that taste like meat or look like meat.
Right. But there's so many plants that not only make the types of foods that we can survive off of, but also make textiles. You have hemp.
Yes.
Hemp makes great fabric. Bamboo. You have silk. You have, or not silk, I'm sorry. You have cotton that, you know, if you want to go for the, like those so-called finer things, get imported Egyptian cotton. That's a little bit finer grade of cotton than what you find in your conventional field. But there's so many materials and fabrics that are made from plants that no animals ever have to be harmed.
Absolutely. And there are companies and retailers who are innovating right now as we speak. They've come up with these amazing, innovative materials, just like you're saying, and putting them together in a way that is better even than the animal skin in terms of wearability and the way it looks. Plus, there's the cruelty-free aspect of it. You know, so the fur industry definitely... You know, I've been involved in many, many, many protests, not so much outreaching to the people who are wearing fur, although that's part of it too, but directly to the businesses, the ones who are lining their pockets with this sort of bloody money. You know, the retailers who are still selling fur, and the animal rights movement, we feel like let's go for the lower hanging fruit first, and most people... Not all of them can get on board a little bit more with, yes, fur is cruel. It's unnecessary and cruel, so we should stop killing animals, you know, for their fur.
Yeah.
And that it's illustrated by the fact that animal rights activists have actually made a difference. There's actually been success. And we count every success. We celebrate every little success because successes are usually few and far between. But these corporations have gone fur free. These retailers have gone fur free. In 2021, a bunch went fur free. Canada Goose, Dolce & Gabbana, Saks Fifth Avenue, Neiman Marcus, Saint Laurent, they all went fur free. And it was really all mainly because, well, it's going out of trend and it's going out of style. Anyway, people don't want to buy it. But it's also because of the pressure that animal rights activists within this animal rights movement put on these retailers to drop fur for all the reasons. I mean, for them, it's probably the bottom line is the dollar, but maybe someone in these retailers also had a moment where they felt like ethically, it's barbaric and cruel to our animal friends. So we're going to continue to put the pressure on the remaining, and we're not going to stop. We're not stopping until the remaining retailers and fashion brands all announce a fur-free policy.
That's fantastic. Well,
that's
Michelle,
one of our goals.
Right. We're going to come back, and right now DJ Legend Brother O is going to play a track and come back and continue further in this conversation. It's going really well. Brother O, take it away. Talking about vegan activism look like, and I'm online with my special guest, Michelle Granberg, who is a healer and animal sanctuary worker and vegan activist herself. And we're having a great conversation about just making people aware and showing them what vegan activism looks like and letting them know what the message sounds like. What is the real premise? What are we saying? What are we going after? Like, why are we dedicating ourselves to animal rights? And, you know, Michelle, sometimes I think people don't think it's that important. Like, you know, especially, and I hate to say it or even go this route, but I think especially religious people, they take this thought process based on a scripture that's in the Bible that says man was given dominion over the animals. And I think that scripture was misconstrued in so many ways to say that, okay, since we have dominion, that means we get to do whatever we want with them. I think dominion in this case means management. And I think the Creator and the universe will hold us responsible for poor management, because that's what this has turned into be. We've managed the earth in such a poor fashion. Dominion means that you know what place to put everything. You know where each thing has its function. It doesn't mean taking over and making someone lower or something lower than you. It means that you know what to do with that particular entity or thing and put it in its right place. So talk about that, the whole notion of people thinking that animals are so much lower than them that they, you know, it doesn't, they think it doesn't matter what they do with the animal's life.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that. I totally agree that sometimes when people are approached about animal rights, they immediately go into that minimizing. They minimize the animal's experience. Some people will even laugh. Very often they almost think it's funny. And again, I think it's sort of a defense mechanism, like, why would you even talk about, they're just animals. We hear that a lot. They're just animals. And in terms of,
wow.
Yeah, you know, right? And, you know, humans are more powerful than animals in the sense that we rule the world, right? But we misuse, what do we do, what we do with that power, how we channel that power, how we wield that power says a lot about us. We could take that power and channel it into kindness, but you're right, you know, and having dominion, I interpret that as we are the stewards of the animals.
We
have a responsibility to be their protectors and to care for them. I think that really is the message of why animals are here with us. And they're not here
mm-hmm.
for us. They are here with us. You know, so often, you know, one of the pushbacks or the distractions that people will offer up when you begin the conversation about animal rights is, well, don't you care about humans? Don't you care about how there are humans who are homeless and humans who are poor? And of course we do. We try to point out, and often that's just sort of a distraction away from animal rights as an independent but related issue. You know, we can seek justice
yeah.
for both, and it's not human rights or animal rights. It's the intersection and coexistence of both. You
wow.
can be both a humanitarian and a vegan animal rights activist and stand up for more than one social justice issue at a time, right? Women's rights, civil rights, gay rights, and animal rights. You know, I just encourage people to stand up for something.
Yeah. It's all one, and we just stand up for those rights and put them
That's
all
right.
together. It's like, you know, you don't separate them and say, oh, well, it's not as important, so we diminish this one over here and then put ours above. No, but if we respect all rights as being rights, then, you know, it's across the board, and you don't think one is lower than the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And then again, more from a spiritual perspective, like what affects you affects me, and it's the same. What affects animals also affects me. It's all connected in this circle of life and the way that we're all affecting one another. You know, there's this idea that none of us are free if animals are not free. That we'll never have,
right.
You know, let's say a miracle happened tomorrow and humans stop enacting violence against each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
A miracle, and that just stopped tomorrow. But if we were still being violent toward animals, we would still never have peace. We would still not be completely peaceful and free if animals were
mm-hmm.
still suffering. So it really is all connected in that way.
No, it really is. And I think, it's really sad to say, and people, I know a lot of people won't embrace this concept, but
mm-hmm.
don't you think that there's some type of karma that we, as people who are supposed to be stewards of the earth, are reaping right now because of how we've treated the animals? Because like you always say, animals are sentient beings and they carry a spirit. And one thing about spiritual energy, it never dies. It just transfers. And so I believe that karma with what the world is suffering from now and how chaotic the world is and how unbalanced the systems of the world are has a lot to do with the slaughter and the killing and the shedding of blood of innocent animals at that, you know, because they're honestly, and I talked about this, I mentioned this on our last conversation about some mm-hmm. reading I've done in the some of the ancient biblical texts called the Gospel of the Essenes. And it says specifically that no animal should be harmed or slaughtered except in the defense of another human.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're, you know, in a place where an animal's attacking, then you should do something to try to subdue that animal in the protection of the other human. But animals weren't put on here on this earth for our slaughter. There was never the will of the Creator for us to begin slaughtering animals, eating them, and you know, using them for our own selfish gain, such as wearing your skins, or, you know, that was not the initial will of the Creator. So, you know, people can try to put a religious concept to this and say, oh, well, you know, God sent, you know, meat down for such and such, and he had sacrifice. That stuff was all written by scribes who rearranged the Bible. And that's a whole different conversation. I don't really want to get into that. But you should know a little bit more about spiritual history before you go making a claim that you think you know God so well or the Creator so well that you think that it was his mission to put animals down here for us to just kill them all off and put them on the grill and fire them up and have them for our consumption. You're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
The Creator would have made our mouths and our systems to consume such, you know, food, for lack of a better term. We weren't made, our bodies were not made to consume flesh. Look at our teeth, look at our stomachs, look at our intestinal systems and our intestinal tract. It was not made to consume meat. And you could, you know, say it all day long, I love my steak, I love my pork chops, whatever. That's very nice. That's what you're used to. But your body was not made to be storage for dead flesh.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's tons of science, you know, behind that. That humans are not carnivores, that they have adapted in such a way that they can process, you know, but if you really look at it, it's showing up as cancers and illnesses and, you know, digestive issues and, you know, lactose intolerance and all of these are, you know, and body odor and, you know, constipation and all of these things. And people are not necessarily connecting it, you know, to the fact that we're not carnivores. We're eating what we're not designed to eat, you know,
yes.
And then, and even that the way that it's affecting us energetically from that spiritual level as we, you know, every single time if we sit down at our plate and we're eating death, you know, we're eating rigor mortis, we're eating a cadaver,
right.
We're eating a
yeah.
corpse, you know, and what
right.
can that possibly be doing? Now, I mean, another part of that is all the chemicals they pump in order to keep it fleshy, in order to keep it pink, because a body
yeah.
will
oh, yeah.
immediately, upon death, a body will start to decompose, will turn gray when there's no more blood
right.
pumping. So they keep it looking alive and fresh with chemical. Anyway, that's a whole other part of it. I'm just certainly no
yeah.
expert in all of that, but I do
True.
Agree that the world around us is a reflection of all of our collective inner worlds, right? And so part of why it
yeah.
seems like we're living in a world that really we feel like it's so dystopic right now, like everywhere we look,
mm-hmm.
there's another level of people hating each other, hurting each other, going to great lengths to do horrible things to each other on small scales and large scales, you know. Is it separate and disconnected from the fact that we harm animals and are violent toward animals? Is it separate and disconnected that the person who works in the slaughterhouse killing animals all day then goes home and is so desensitized to the normalized violence that they have no qualms about yelling at their family or being violent toward
wow.
their family?
Yeah.
Of course there are connections. And there's been studies done with all of that. And again, I'm no expert in all of that, you know, but here we are. We're just trying to paint this broader picture of
yeah.
what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And I think we, you know, it's funny because we as humans, we can turn a deaf ear to what we want to turn a deaf ear to. You know,
right.
you say one thing and we'll embrace that right away. And you say another thing and it's like, oh, well, no, I don't agree with that. Because, again, it takes people out of their comfort zone. It puts the guilt and it reflects their own behavior back to themselves. And a lot of people don't want to embrace that level of self-accountability.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so that's why some people What's that?
No, I said it's very hard for them to embrace that.
Yes. You know, change seems to be the hardest thing for us as individuals. Unless you really make it a point to embrace change and to consider every different point of view and different lifestyle and different belief and really, really consider it, the majority of people, their biggest fear is change. People are afraid of the unknown,
mm-hmm.
even when it feels right. You know, if people just open up their hearts and open up their minds, but people are just in different places. So we have to acknowledge and honor that only because it is what it is. I was in a different place at one time. So were you, right? We were
right.
eating animals. I was eating animals up until 6-7 years ago. So I didn't get
right.
it. I didn't get it. I didn't make the connection. Now I make the connection. Now I'm trying to help others make the connection. And we will reach who we're meant to reach in terms of who might resonate with this message, who's ready to become vegan, or if they're already vegan, who is ready to be an activist and take their love of animals to that next level.
Yeah.
If we
now,
reach just one person.
This is Brother O. Listen, we have some callers on. I don't know if the teleprompter is working for Brother Yosef, but not only that, but before I go to my next track, here's caller number one right now. Caller number one, you're live with Chef Yosef and Eating on a Spiritual Level right here at WBNN.
This is Mo Garman calling from Philadelphia. How are you?
Hey, Mo. How are you?
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
I wanted to call in to support your show. I'm enjoying your perspective and your guests. I am vegan.
Appreciate that.
But I'm not an activist. I became vegan because of Game Changer on Netflix and the health
vegan. Oh, yeah.
But I am learning a whole new perspective tonight, so I'm going to sit back and listen to your show and learn a few things.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you for being open-minded.
Oh, Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, and you know, if you're wondering, like, how do you get started and how you jump in, you know, to activism, you can go slowly. You can just put your toes in the water. You know, there's many ways. You can certainly reach out to me. But I definitely encourage you to, you know, even just talking to people about veganism is a form of activism as well. Posting on social media, you know, sharing information, sharing about the documentaries that are out there, you know, that is also activism in a sense as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's good. Well, Mo, thank you for calling in. And you know, just as you're learning more and more in this lifestyle, just, you know, do your research and look at some things in regards to the slaughter of animals, and it'll strengthen your cause for wanting to be vegan, not only just for your health, but when you see, you know, how they're treated, it'll wake up some things in you. And, you know, I believe that you're a compassionate person, so that will ignite itself when you see the information. So thank you again for calling in. And right now we're going to go to DJ Legend Brother O for another track. Brother O, take it away.
Thank you.
All right. That is one, I think that's one of Toto's most classic songs, Africa. Great song, by the way. Thanks, Brother O, for all the music you've been sharing tonight. We have another caller in queue, Michelle, someone else wanting to join the conversation. Caller 2, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, this is Kiana Speaks. I'm calling in from Jersey. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Kiana, how are you?
I'm good. Hello. I want to say thanks to Brother O for playing the good music, but I also wanted to make a suggestion and also ask a question. My suggestion, I was listening to you guys and how people react to certain things that you say as far as, you know, with your activism. And they want to know, like, you know, they ask you questions about what you care about. And I was thinking maybe you could start the conversation like, you know, I care about the homeless and I care about this, like A, B, and C. But what I want to talk about right now is, you know, like, you know, the slaughtering of animals. You know, maybe people will be more conscious and listen to what you're saying. If I don't have a problem, I'm just saying, like, other people, maybe they'll be more receptive of your message that you have to speak if you mention those things in the beginning. So that way, you know, you can actually have a conversation with those individuals. The other thing I wanted to ask you, so I'm not vegan. However, I have, like, you know, thought about it and it has been on my mind, you know. But the one thing that deters me a little bit is the preparation of meals. When I watch, I follow a lot of vegan people on Instagram and try to get different ideas on how I can eat healthier. But one thing I can say is it is not easy. The preparation and things that go into, you know, the transition of the diet is a lot harder than someone just putting something on a grill or something like that to equate to actual meat. So I want to know, for someone who possibly maybe say might be disabled or, you know, may not be able to be in the kitchen and do those things and want to enjoy the quality of the meals, what would you say to those individuals so they can make the transition into being vegan?
YouTube.
Okay.
Honestly, YouTube and food. Seriously, there. All you have to do is go to YouTube and type in vegan meals, and about 1,000,001 recipes and ways to make simple meals will come up. You can even narrow it down to something and put in there vegan meals on the go or vegan meals for a busy person, and there will be so many ideas and recipes that come up. For you to try, you know, making new vegan meals for yourself. And it really is not as hard as you think it is. It's just what it is it's different for you. It won't be the same as, you know, preparing some chicken on the grill or putting a roast in the oven or, you know, even like if you're a person that's busy and has a heavy work schedule, you say, "Oh, I'm gonna put this roast in my slow cooker, and it'll be done by the time I get home. I can have dinner." You know, it's just as easy, if not easier, because you don't have to do any meat preparation. You can literally take some vegetables, some brown rice, and you know, put that stuff in a big pot, make you some. And get some meal prep dishes they sell at the grocery store and put together like 4 or 5 of those, and you have something to take, you know, on the go. And it's not going to spoil as fast as if it was neat. And there's so many things, so many options you can have, because what I recommend doing is going to your local farmer's market. Vegetables and fruits are very cheap there. It's a lot cheaper than your grocery store. Grocery store marks everything up. So, look at YouTube, get some ideas.
I was more speaking of people who 100% want to make the transition right away and they want the meat equivalent of whatever it is, but they're physically challenged to do so with certain things. That's what I was more speaking of, you know, as far as how can they make the transition. That's what I was speaking of. Like the meat, like as far as like, let's say they just don't feel like they can like let go of it. How do they make that transition? Let's say if they're physically challenged with certain things to do so, even in maybe in the regular cooking, you know, and they want to transition. Let's say someone else does their meal preparation or something. How can they transition? That's the audience that I was speaking of.
Okay, and you're speaking, I'm assuming perhaps someone elderly.
Elderly, disabled, you know, maybe, yeah. Immobile, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Will be the easiest way for them to, you know, like.
Try out some different textures. Try out some different textures. There's, you know, mushrooms are a great meat replacement. Jackfruit is a good meat replacement. You can do things such as artichokes or, you know, they have some of the, I'm not a big proponent of a lot of the fake meats. Like they have Beyond Meat, they have Beyond Chicken. Gardein is a good brand. You know, those are some of the things that kind of taste like meat for a person that's transitioning. And it'll, you know, be a little bit more easier and palatable for them if they're so used to that meaty type texture and flavor. Those are very close. Veal roast, I think, is one of the best ones because it doesn't have, like, such a chemical aftertaste. It's made with mushrooms and eggplant, so it's very natural.
Well, thank you.
I
got to
come on and say something real quick.
I really appreciate it.
Hold on a second, Tiana. And I hear what you're saying and what Chef is saying is outstanding. It's going to cost money, okay? It's going to cost money. People who are disabled and the situations, they can have meals prepared for them. Of course, most people who are disabled have, you know, counters and shelves that are able for them to roll or be able to walk to, what have you, whatever the situation is for them, be able to cook them. I see a lot of times with a lot of disabled people in their homes now, and Chef can definitely contest to this, not contest, but you agree. You know, the key of an air fryer is so important. And for a lot of disabled people, prepared meals. And like Chef said, go on YouTube for that. There are a lot of organizations that prepare vegan meals for the disabled. And they can deliver them to the home. And another thing, too, a person that is very, very, situations happen to them, they're able to get to the door, whatever, you know, it should be to the home care provider to be able to do these things for a person who's very, very uninclined to be able to do this for themselves. So it's going to cost money to do these things. And we hope that we have people in the family that knows that person is disabled, and to make sure that they are fed the right way. How about that?
Yeah, well, Meals and Wheels does it as well. They even have plant-based options for their meals that they deliver for disabled and seniors.
Well, not every person who's disabled is, you know, income restricted, you know, because they may be on a pension or, you know, medically retired and things like that. So it's not always about, you know, that they can't afford it. You know, it just might be physically. I know people personally who have enough money, it's not about that. It's just, you know, they may not be able
to
do
it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But the key is, Tiana, is not that. What I said, it's going to cost money, no matter if they can afford it or not. The key is to make sure that person, listen, it's the key is to make sure that person is getting the outstanding care that they need. And, you know, if a person is affluential, that's wonderful. A person who has, you know, socioeconomic challenges, that's not wonderful. But we got to make sure that those people, you brought up a good question, and I answered it.
Well, I thank you for your answers and the, you know, the suggestions for the meat alternative, you know, thing. So it's something that I can even look into as well, because those are the things that I've seen on Instagram and, you know, the couple of things that you mentioned or so, you know. So definitely thank you for your answers and, you know, I really appreciate it. You know, and you've done a wonderful
job,
of course, both of you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I think we got another caller in queue. Caller 3, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, my tribal name is Huni Bakatun, and my appearing stage name is Master Tar Magic Man Haru. How are you doing tonight, Chef Yosef?
Doing just fine. Thanks for calling in.
Great. And I'm enjoying your special honored guest. I want to speak on behalf of ancient peoples, me being both a descendant from ancient Nuba as well as ancient America. that I'm also an advocate. My people have also been advocates for animals. Matter of fact, we live beside and were pretty much was at one with animals. Now, we did exercise a sense of control because all animals such as deers aren't Bambi, okay? So we have to exercise a certain amount of control. And I strongly agree with activism, unlike corporate America and big business that want to utilize these animals for profit, for money. And that's a major, major difference, and I didn't want that to be misconstrued. So I definitely want to take time to do that. But I'm the host of We Will Aware You. My show will be next week, and I'll be speaking about critical race theory at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time next Thursday. You know, and the question is, what are they trying to hide? Now, as far as you, Chef Joseph, I got some good news for you, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
First of all, I want to say that I'm so proud of you, man. I love your shows. Your shows keep getting greater. Congratulations,
thank you.
Chef
that.
Joseph, on your WBNN all-time connection record with your fifth all-time with the historic Bowling Lodge Championship honoring our late Hall of Famer.
That's great. Thanks a lot, brother, for calling in. Appreciate you always.
You're welcome.
Right now we're going to go back to Brother O. Play us another track.
Never care for me.
Classics by Toto tonight, DJ Legend Brother O. Thanks for the music, brother. We have another caller. And Michelle, I think people are really intrigued. I think you lit a spark tonight. So caller four, state your name and where you're calling from, please. And if you don't mind, please ask a question or give a comment to our guest.
Yes, I will. Peace and blessings, Shel. And please, peace and blessings to your guest. This is Sister Bessie DeTruca. I'm enjoying...
How are you?
All right. I'm enjoying your guests. I'm enjoying your encouragement for us to eat right and take the things that are proper for our life. I have a little short story that I just want to tell you about and your guests. I grew up in the South, and we ate a lot of pork, and I left the South and brought it to the North, and I continued eating the pork, and also I was eating, it's not clams, raw clams, and by the time I was 30, about 32, I ended up in the hospital. And what had happened was that the parasites and the meat that I was eating was eating away at my intestines. And they had to cut out the damaged part and sew it back together. And I'm really supposed to be wearing a bag, a stool bag. But the Most High made it so that I didn't have to do that. But I also wanted to say that I try to detox my intestines. There's a herb called wormwood and black walnut. And I use that periodically to clean my intestines. And I've decided to eat one meal a day. So I won't gain a lot of weight. So what do you think about my comments on the parasites from meat that can damage your intestines?
Michelle, take it away. Give your thoughts on that.
Well, I wish I could really, really address that well. Unfortunately, I'm just not so much an expert on the nutritional and aspect of eating a plant-based diet. I mean, I just know that a plant-based diet is certainly one of the proven best diets out there that there is, and that it can not only prevent all kinds of illnesses and diseases, but it can actually sometimes turn them around. So who I would refer, I would defer to Dr. Greger. If I was going to recommend, you know, just one person to sort of look up and follow who sort of has, knows the whole, the entire wheelhouse, it would be Dr. Michael Greger, G-R-E-G-E-R, for those kinds of things. I wish I could say a little bit more about
that.
I
also noticed that a lot of foods that we have, even though they are vegetables and some are meat, it's turning out that they're putting insects in the meats. And I just saw something today where a lady was using vinegar and baking soda to clean the vegetables with water. And when she cleaned the strawberries, bugs were coming out in the water.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So,
it's gross.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So we got a double bubble. We got a problem with the meats, and we also have problems with the vegetables, but we need to know how to clean those vegetables before we cook them or eat them.
Right. Well, I think vinegar and baking soda are some of the most natural products you can use to clean the vegetables. It helps to get a lot of the pesticide residue, as well as some of the bugs that are laden in the vegetables and fruits when they're picked. Now, that's something that is just part of nature, and we can't really control that. But to clean them, that's probably one of the most natural ways we can use to clean them instead of, you know, running them in tap water or something like that. But as far as, like, the parasites we mentioned earlier, it's going to be within any animal product that you consume. And what happens is all of us have parasites, and parasites control you in such a way that they cause you to eat things that you wouldn't normally eat because they get into your brain cells. And what happens is you wonder why you're craving certain things, because you're eating what the parasites want you to eat, you know, especially like things like sugar and crunchy snacks and, you know, high caloric foods. They are affecting your emotions, and they kind of influence you what to eat. So one of the best things you can do, and again, I'm no expert, but I'm talking from experience and from what I've studied myself. One of the best things you can do is do possibly a yearly or biannually parasite cleanse. There's things you can use such as diatomaceous earth, clove powder. All those things kill parasites. You know, there's plenty of websites out there that have like parasite cleanses based on like herbal blends and everything like that. Check out a couple of those. Even Dr. Chinchilla, I think she has some herbal blends that can help with getting rid of parasites. So, you know, she's a great resource because she's a naturopath. So she has some blends and some compounds that, you know, you can use to rid yourself of those types of things and just keep yourself healthy.
All right. Thank you, Brother Chef, and thank you to your guests. The Front Porch will be on this Friday, and I'm going to sit back and enjoy this wonderful show. Peace and blessings.
Thank you. Peace and blessings
to
you.
Thank you.
I have another caller in queue, caller 5. State your name and where you're calling from, and please ask a question or give a comment to our guests.
Good evening, Chef. Hi, this is Antonia Batts, and how are you tonight,
how
Michelle?
You? Good.
All great. Right. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I was enjoying listening to your whole spiel on the necessity of trying to pull away from meat. I can say for years my mother would tell me, because she knew I'm a meat lover, if I could get a double quarter pounder with cheese from McDonald's, right? A single, she know I would enjoy that obviously, over eating anything like asking them for extra tomato and extra lettuce, which obviously costs you more if you ask for that also. But I wanted to really direct this to a small article I saw. I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but they asked a pretty odd question. They said, do you, well, it really was directed to a fiber. The question was, do you think that, or do you realize that too much fiber can cause cancer? Now, that's the oddest thing. And truthfully, a lot of us are not familiar with what fiber is about. They may think it's anything from oatmeal to a variety of things like certain fruits and vegetables where you get fiber from, which fiber I thought was always highly recommended because maybe it has something to do with your digestive and your cleansing system. Well, obviously, if they bring up that question, they're trying to give us the impression that maybe too much fiber in certain forms are considered possibly cancerous. Could you give us an idea what they may be talking about? And then I will eventually read the article. Thank you.
Sure. Honestly, that's the first I've ever heard of something like that with fiber being possibly cancerous. I was always told that that's something that we need to help, you know, push things through our intestinal tract. Shell, have you ever heard any concept about that?
I can't say that I have. I'd have to look that up myself and sort of do some research and some reading around that. I'm with you that I've always heard that fiber is really important for health, really important for gut health, maybe even more important than protein in many ways.
Yeah.
So I can't say that I know much more, so sorry.
and most of what you get your fiber from is plants, so I don't know what that's from. What I would recommend, Antonia, is looking a little bit more into some of that information, but I would also look at some of what some expert doctors and nutritionists have to say about that, because I don't know exactly what they're basing their theory off of.
Thank you. I agree. But since you said that, like you said, most of it is in the form of plants and vegetables. But what about fiber? Is it in oatmeal and like cream of wheat or wheat bran cereals and breads and things like that? Is that
It is in that, but that's not your most natural form of fiber. Your most natural form of fiber is in just straight up fruits and vegetables, especially like your cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and, you know, cauliflower, things like that. That gives you great for your dark leafy greens, apples, some of your hard fruits like, apples and things like plums, stone fruits, great sources of fiber like that. At least, you know, that is your most natural source and plant-based. The breads and the oatmeals are too, but most of them have been processed. So you're getting stuff directly off a tree. I don't think you can go wrong. That's probably your best source of fiber there is.
Of you, Michelle and Chef, you've been very informative because I've always had a question about fiber. And when you all just had broken it down, I think that was, definitely something people needed to know, because I think it's like a cross between the, you know, the breads and, for example, and the fruits and things that of that nature. You always say, well, why do these coarse objects like oats and wheat and whatever seem to be called fiber? And then again, you know, the natural juices and things like that from the fruits seem to be called fiber too. So thank you for clarifying that.
Well, Tony, I got to say something too. You know, I got to say this too, Chef and Michelle too. Antoni, what you're talking about is something that was already sprayed. Okay? We all know that the poisons in the air could cause anything to be, you know, not right. And a lot of times with fiber, if it's in a soil that is contaminated, then yes, it will cause cancer. Now back to the program.
All right. Antonia, thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate your comments and everything you had to ask to my guest and to me. And tell us when your next show is as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It'll be, would you believe, on Halloween night. I'm going to I'm going to give out some goodies to the children, and I hope I can put a piece of, because they're always looking at me for candy. I'm hoping that they will accept a piece of fruit, and if I see it thrown out on the ground, then I know that we have a lot of work to do about getting them to be adjusted, because once I offer the children grapes when they expected to see candy when I came into my or my apartment, and only one child said, I eat grapes, maybe the child was hungry. As for the other children, they shook their head because they know what they wanted, because they're used to getting the goodies, you know, in the form of, like, candies and, you know, like we did when we were, like, you know, children. You know, after all, we have to admit sugar is addictive, and we know that's not a good thing.
Right.
So
thank you so much. We're going to our last track for our DJ legend, Brother O, and we'll come back and close it out.
I was born in the land.
We got another caller in queue. Caller 6, state your name and where you're calling from, and please ask a question to our guest.
Yo, this is Clever One, one half of the Booze Brothers, representing from the Broad Street Bully side of Philadelphia, where we tackle Dallas Cowboy fans on an escalator on Patterson Avenue. But yo, I'm giving a shout out to the chef and shout out to the guests, you know what I'm saying? Shell, what's good? What up? What up? What up? But I have a good question. I have a question. This question is based on research and studies. The majority of a lot of the vegans and a lot of the vegan, and some of the ones that are activists and a lot of them that are activists, the numbers of the vegans that are activists in the ratio numbers of counts, a lot of these people are inner city people in urban areas, people in colleges, people who live, corporate lives, lifestyles, things like that. People in which that more so never been on a farm and have no desire to be farmers. So my question is, what can we do to fix the ratio of the farm situation, where we can have more farmers, we can have, that's how we can save them. You know what I'm saying? If we saving them, that's how we save them, become farmers. So I wanted to know, like, what's the odds of the greater number of the people who are activists against the animals? They don't want to be farmers. I want to know, is this something, I want to understand it. This is my question. From the Booze Brothers, Philadelphia.
All right, well, great.
Go
what
for it, Michelle. I don't know. You tell me what your thoughts are first, and I'll follow up.
I think it's a big question that I don't have a really, kind of short answer to that. I think caller, you're asking, is one of the solutions to to diminishing animal agriculture, animal farming, is to increase plant farming, like vegetable farming, fruits and plant farming, and how can folks who weren't raised around farms or raised in country areas or rural areas, sort of even have interest or skills or even know that it's an option to sort of move in the direction of farming as a profession? Is that your question?
Okay, well, let me reiterate my question. My question is that there's a great ratio of the number of people who are active in the movement of saving the animals. However, these people, the research study went further. With these people, these same people were people who had no desire to farm animals or never been on a farm with animals, where their great love for the animal, to save them, they don't know the cultivation on how they're raised and birthed and bred it, where right. They care for them on this level. They should know these things knowledgeably and have the experience to know why they care much about these animals. So that's what the thesis and research and study was were subject to misunderstand. So I just have questions for those who, you know, who are familiar with these activists, such as the Saving the Animals and things like that, and the vegans and stuff like that, where these become cultures for people, and make more so maybe some slight on a religious level. You know what I'm saying? But in a sense, you know what I mean? These are the things in which if we're going to fix it, instead of asking questions, where we find solutions and use our sensible minds to do so. You know what I mean? I'm Clever One, one half of the Booze Brothers, representing from the Broad Street Bully side of Philadelphia, where we duct tape baby fathers when they transgress against the women in the family when they frying chicken. Check your satellites.
Okay. All right. So I think we did our best to try to answer that question, but it was a loaded one. So I don't have all the information on that, but I think we can just keep fighting the fight. Michelle, we're coming to a close. So give us your final thoughts and, of course, share your information on how people can get a hold of you and how they can possibly get involved with even the activism portion of what you do, or invite them to one of the animal sanctuaries that you serve at. So, you know, maybe they get the experience of seeing what that is firsthand and maybe want to try that out and get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. I think you read my mind, because that was sort of how I was going to end with those couple of suggestions, or just those, in terms of getting started with advocating for animals. Sanctuaries, farm animal sanctuaries, are really critical to the animal rights movement. So, you know, to visit or volunteer or at least support farm animal sanctuaries. You know, I volunteer regularly at local vegan farm animal sanctuaries. And it's really important to know that true vegan sanctuaries are not farms or petting zoos. They don't breed animals or charge money to see the animals, or they don't see the animals as entertainment or use their bodies. They'll never be harmed or killed there. A sanctuary is actually just that. It's a sanctuary. It's a forever home where the animals who are often rescued from farms will live out their days and receive food and shelter and medical care and socialization and stimulation from humans who genuinely care for them and really see them as friends, like as family. So, you know, I could give a list, but I won't right now, of the New Jersey sanctuaries, that someone can always reach out to me. You know, as much as I'd love to shout them out, I don't want to take too much time. And then the other suggestion is, I'm a mentor and team member with AAM, which is Animal Activism Mentorship. You can visit animalactivismmentorship.com. We have a free 3-month mentorship program that pairs experienced activists with aspiring activists. And you get one-on-one mentoring to help you get started in becoming an effective activist. So,
nice.
You know, so that's, and then my information is, you know, anybody can reach out to me at michellegranberg.com, subscribe to my YouTube channel, search for Michelle Granberg Positive Energy TV, and check out the things that I do. And I'm certainly here to guide anybody who really genuinely and sincerely would like to start on this path.
That's fantastic. And I'm so grateful for you coming on so we could continue this conversation. So it's been very helpful and informative. But again, thank you, Michelle, for coming on my show. We're going to go to Brother O to give us final thoughts with Ngozi time.
All right. Wonderful show tonight, Joseph, Chef Joseph. I enjoyed your guest, Michelle Granberg. Great job. And the wonderful callers with all of the wonderful questions. And this is Dr. Chinchilla J. And thanks for mentioning me as being a naturopath tonight. I just wanted to respond to, I think it was Sister Bessie, talking about the parasites and how they had to cut out a portion of her colon and her intestines and sew them back together and all that. And it's a good thing that she's not walking around with the colostomy bag now. But parasites, my goodness, parasites are found in every piece of meat that you buy in a store and that you eat. Every meat has parasites. And parasites not only live in the intestines and in the stomach and the gut area, parasites can be in any part of your body, even up in your head and your brain. A lot of people that suffer from migraines and headaches and, you know, all that stuff, parasites are in their head, in the brain. And parasites are very, very deadly. They multiply. If you don't get rid of them, they breed. And they cause a lot of stomach problems and all types of problems. So you definitely want to get rid of the parasites in your body. And every meat eater, believe me, you have parasites. And a lot of you that eat a lot of chocolate, you also have parasites in your body because chocolate carries parasites as well. And so just be careful. You are what you eat. So eat healthy, people. Eat healthy. And I believe it was Antonia that talks about the fiber. Now, fiber is not cancerous at all. The body definitely needs fiber, just as Chef Joseph said and Michelle said, the body needs fiber. Fiber helps to build bulky stool so that your stool won't be runny and loose. And it keeps you healthy, so the body needs that fiber. As the saying goes, when I was a child, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So, yes, an apple a day will keep the doctor away. Apple is filled with pectin and fiber. The fiber you need for your bodies, people. And so, no, fiber is not cancerous. But what's happening today with a lot of the food, especially like corn and wheat, these things are filled with mycotoxins now. And mycotoxins are cancerous. And also, they're genetically modifying so many different foods today. All bioengineered foods are out there like crazy, like crazy. And you want to stay away from those things because they're not healthy for you. So I have a lot more I could say, but I won't tonight. And, again, I enjoyed your show, Chef Joseph, and congratulations on your fifth WBNN. You're welcome. On your fifth WBNN all-time connection record, awesome job, yes. And tune in, everybody, on Sunday. Sunday I will be presenting a show with the Working Families Party. That's a new political group that's out here now. And so like the Republicans and the Democrats, we have a Working Families Party now, and they're going to be talking about the importance of the upcoming election. And in Pennsylvania, the last day to register to vote in Pennsylvania, everybody, is October 24th. So make sure you get out and register so that you can vote in this important election that's coming up. And so tune in. We're going to be talking about D.A. Krasner and all kinds of other things going on in the political arena. And it's going to be a doozy on Sunday night right here on WBNN on News Forum. All right. WBNN has advertising through Ngozi Time, Old Time Media. We're on Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter at Ngozi_time and Oladele Malebe Ngozi at Facebook. Any comments and suggestions for our wonderful programming tonight, oladele.ngozi@my.com. For our mother's and father's favorite producer, Oladele Malebe Ngozi, I am WBNN Commissioner Dr. Chinchilla J, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Forces Radio that support us on a constant basis. And stay tuned tomorrow night for the Jesus Show with International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting nominee Christine Powell, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Or you can tune in at www.blogtalkradio.com. Now, stay tuned as we get back to culinary master vegan Chef Joseph.
Thank you, everyone, for calling in tonight. Thank you for listening. And thank you to my guest, Michelle Granberg, for joining me and talking about this subject matter on what does vegan activism look like. I know a lot of you are unaware of this topic and unaware of how it works. But I encourage you to do your research, look up some information, check out YouTube videos, documentaries, things on Netflix you can look at just to make yourself more aware of vegan activism and the purpose of it being to save the animals and preserve life on Earth and make the better circumstances for the environment. So we're so happy to have had this show tonight. I think it's been very informative and very enlightening. So to all of you that listened in and called in to speak to my guest and ask questions, give comments, I appreciate you. Thank you to DJ Legend Brother O and to the WBNN Network. Thank you for being part of this family. And until next time, we'll see you in 4 weeks with Eating on a Spiritual Level with Chef Yosef. Good night.